So north.
Years ago, white farmers displaced the Shoshone tribe. This arid desert was known as Nevada, meaning snow-covered. Dean Baker is 71 years old. For years, he has fought the southern water thieves, as he calls them.
Well, the danger is that I am believed that their old total intention was to take all the water.
We met Dean 7 years ago in his wife Denise's coffee house while reporting on a pipeline project that would transport water to Las Vegas. Back then, he explained that for many years, they had been using the springs of this land for their cattle. He warned that if Las Vegas Water Authority pumped their water table, their springs would dry out.
It's drier now than it was 7 years ago. Last year we had no moisture, we had no snow, and it didn't get cold. This storm we had is the first good storm we've had in about 3 years.
For Dean Baker, keeping water in Snake Valley is his life's work. Dean Baker said that there used to be many springs in this area, but unfortunately due to the Las Vegas pipeline project, the ecosystem has been disrupted. Pumping the water tables has caused the wells to go dry. Many wild horses have died of thirst just because there are no springs left.
Oh, this is the 100-year war. We're ahead right now. We've won 4 out of 5 court cases, so we're on top. We're waiting to see what they're going to do next.
They thought they could convince me to sell the ranch, and I never would. And so I got to see what they really did, and I learned hugely what they wanted to do. I learned that what they really expected is to get all the ranches, all the land, and they intended to take all of the water, the one running off the mountains, and the water, and just take all the water and do away with all the farms and ranches and just put the water down there and do away with it.
The Bakers breed 2,000 heads of cattle on a 48 square kilometer area. They want authorities to change their policies.
Well, I just thought it would be a disaster, and what it would be, it would, in the end, it would be a way with taking away with the livestock that was on there, all of the things, the
wildlife.
On the wildlife and a lot of things, it would be just a disaster.
Construction was to start in 2008. This giant project would cost $3 million. 20 million cubic meters of water would go to Las Vegas.
We went through the Great Recession when the economy crashed. And, of course, Nevada and Las Vegas were hurt worse than any place in the country. The unemployment rate, the foreclosures on the houses, all of that. It was hard on us. Any business in the United States really had a tough time. And we learned some lessons from it running our business. Las Vegas is back to where it was before the Great Recession, building as fast, spending money the same way they were, and they didn't learn a thing from that recession.
According to the Las Vegas Valley Water District, a Las Vegas resident consumes 446 liters a day. 3 times more than a German. Saving water is only just now being considered. It's hard to say how long this city in the desert can masquerade as a lush paradise. The manager of the Southern Nevada Water Authority had actually sounded the alarm many years ago. A few years later, she said,
"The pipeline project's not dead. It is still very much a part of the resource plan. We knew we were going to be taken to court. But the immediacy of it isn't there. I mean, unless there's a catastrophe on the Colorado River, it won't be needed for 15, 20 years. So we have the luxury of time.
The situation at the Hoover Dam shows how dire things are. Since 1998, water levels at Lake Mead are dropping. This Colorado Dam supplies water to Southern California and to farms in Arizona and Nevada.
It's lower than I remember it from last time I was here, about 9 months ago. And it's been low for a while, as you can tell, because there's vegetation almost at the water line. So it's this time of year, the water should be much, much higher, and it's just not enough. There's just not enough water coming into the river system. You can see over here where there's ladders that go down to the old water line. It's 20 feet. And the spillways, of course, are even higher than that. So this is a very, very serious problem that we're just seeing the top of right now. It's the top of the iceberg of this catastrophic situation on the river.
Of the 40 million residents of the region of Las Vegas, Phoenix, and Los Angeles, few are aware of the problem. But Colorado's water is vital to the Southwest, suffering from unprecedented drought. In California, the National Weather Service has studied this since the turn of the century. Mark Jackson can map the drought's progress.
The gradients compared to the... There's a little bit of spread there.
The drought takes many years to happen. It doesn't happen overnight. And this has been an accumulation of roughly 4 to 10 years of dry conditions. And in fact, in the last 10 years, we have only had one winter season in Southern California where we had above normal rainfall. So this has all been adding up. The deficit is tremendous right now. And this graphic shows how extensive it is through Southern California, all the way up into Central California and over the Sierra Mountains, which much of our water, as you know, comes from up in Central and Northern California, the Colorado River Basin. And both those three water supplies are critical to supplying water to Southern California.
Drought doesn't strike just anywhere. Here, agriculture represents only 2% of California's gross product, but consumes 80% of its water. We meet with a farmer who grows almonds, pistachios, and oranges, David DiPaoli.
You know, California that looks like a shoe a little bit, and kind of right in the middle along the foothills of the Sierra Nevada, we've got either we call it the Central Valley. This is also the most productive area in the world of farming, where you've got oranges and trees and row crops and vegetables and everything. And we depend on water. Otherwise, this valley would be a desert without that water.
Joanna and David grow almonds over 450 hectares. Each almond requires nearly 4 liters of water.
These are almonds that have come off our property. Everything we grow in the world, including California and Tulare County and right here at my house, everything we grow takes water. And everything, and people have to eat. So you have a choice. We have to use water to grow our crops, or you have nothing to eat. If you did some research and looked at the facts of how much water we use, can really show the effect that we're really doing this in a very efficient manner.
Intensive farming and growth are the priority here. Technology helps relieve David's conscience.
This is our weather station to check on the soil moisture. We try to save water, and this machine measures the soil moisture at several different depths of the tree roots.
David uses 750 liters per square meter to irrigate his crops, four times what rainfall provides.
This program and this piece of equipment is a big help for saving water and fertilizer. You can water trees, probably you can hurt trees more by watering them too much than too little. And so this tells me exactly how much moisture is at the trees and in the field.
In 2015, the Californian governor called for emergency measures to reduce water consumption by 25%. But many farms are exempt. In reality, the restrictions only affect 20% of consumption. David has kept this swimming pool, but swears he makes daily efforts to save water.
You can see here in my backyard, over the summer, we've watered a small area, but then on the other side, over here on the other side of the yard, we've let go about over three-fourths of our water that we're not even watering the yard anymore. We've had several bushes die in the yard, and we're just doing our share to conserve water.
Drought is nothing new here. Meteorologists remind us that before intensive farming, the Southwest had been affected by great droughts with lesser consequences. Can technology help the area through this crisis? Some farmers think so.
Thankfully, the way the leaf reflects near infrared light, there is an algorithm where they look at natural light and near infrared light and compare the differences. And there's different algorithms to figure these types of things out. We can take for example, by looking at a pigmentation of the plant, it tells you stories about the chlorophyll content of the plant. And again, these are things that the human eye can't see. But of course we can, and we can see them before anybody else.
This is known as precision agriculture. It enables targeted use of components, water, fertilizer, pesticides, irrigation.
We're going to continue to have water problems, and there's a lot of farmers are being forced to either pull their crops or change them to different types of crops that require less water. So I think it's going to be an ongoing problem, especially for the small farmer.
Our opinion's changing. David is not uprooting olive trees to save water, but because almonds are more profitable. California grows 99% of almonds in the USA. Drill towers are now part of the Central Valley landscape. The water table level has dropped dramatically. The area has been dipping into it for decades. Water levels are dropping so fast that drill companies have trouble keeping up.
Like a one-year waiting list just to get their well drilled. We're backlogged over a year now with other people waiting on the wells. And we had drilled a well here for this guy here, and it only put out like 200 gallons a minute, so we had to come back and go. We was out about 500 foot last time, so we're going down to 1,200 on this one to get the water.
The water table level has dropped by up to 30 meters. drilling wells is a short-term strategy. It's like pushing a straw deeper into a glass being drained. Seawater desalination plants are the new hope. The largest is being built near the Pacific, near San Diego.
We're not going to have to water, are we?
No, but we're not with the rains keep coming.
For decades, we relied on Northern California and the Colorado River for nearly all of our water. The old paradigm has given way to an exciting new world in which the nation's largest, most technologically advanced and energy-efficient seawater desalination plant is producing 50 million gallons of locally controlled, drought-proof water each and every day, enough water to serve approximately 400,000 people.
You've got to remember, from here to the Pacific Ocean is, by car, 2.5 hours. So to move all that desalinated water 200 miles, it would cost the farmers all their profit for water. Well, we might as well not be in the business of farming.
Farm product sales in the Golden State add up to $40 billion a year. Irrigation makes it possible. David has only 10 full-time employees. In some seasons, he employs hundreds of day laborers, some from Mexico. Californians aren't dying of thirst, but in areas like Porterville, 100 homes already rely on drinkable water donations. Water shortage is also a socioeconomic issue. This is a drought resource center. 35,000 people use it. Their wells dried up months ago.
Wells are completely dry, and we have no water at all now. And this is a blessing for us, because otherwise we'd be drinking out of the water hose. And then we don't even have water in the water hose, so that defeats the purpose. Most of the water here in Porterville has gone dry. Even if we got a lake right here, the wells were dug shallow. And so now they got to dig deeper. And that's what's going to cost about $25,000 to do ours. So.
You have a tank at home?
Huh?
Do you have a tank now at home?
No. Well, no, we have a well, but it's not deep enough. They have to dig it deeper. And so the city people, that's different. But when we live out in the country, there's no water out there. That's a bad thing for us.
The county installs potable water tanks in homes. And so these tanks are actually connected to the home's plumbing, and potable water is able to finally go through those pipes once again and then come out of the faucet so people can cook with this water, they can shower with it, they can drink it. It's water that they can use for all purposes. And for some of the residents in our area, it's the first time they've had running water in their homes for quite a few years.
No more running water. It seems impossible in a rich state like California. The National Weather Service claims drought will worsen in the coming years.
It's a scary situation. It's likely that we'll see more records broken as we move forward with the warming. And that warming brings changes to our weather. It brings changes, of course, to our climate. One of the changes is that we will likely see hotter days, long hot spells, warmer nights, and along with that comes the likelihood that we'll see even more severe droughts than what we're seeing right now. If we don't manage our water properly, if we don't adapt to what's happening now, and if governments don't come together to try to do the best they can to curb the warming that's occurring, because warming has occurred. There's no question about it. Man is partly responsible for that warming. So we have to take actions to try to slow that warming down. And or over a long term, it could be highly disastrous.
The Golden State has 40,000 residents, but the ideal of growth at any cost dominates everywhere. But in the long term, California will have to do more than limit water consumption. It will also have to regulate its distribution. David does not want change. He just replaces olive trees with almond trees.
How do they look?
Do you see the buds? These trees have been planted a month now. And look how solid they are in the ground. In another 2 or 3 weeks, they'll be bloomed out and you'll start to see the new growth. I guess the problem that we have, where are we going to be in 5 years without any water?
In the past, Californian droughts lasted up to 20 years. This could be a state of what permanent drought would be like and the end of growth at any cost.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
A close look at Biden's latest proposed budget makes clear the only future American children will inherit is one with a bloated military budget, racist policing, widespread indebtedness, and an uninhabitable planet. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Braxton Berrywington writer. This article is published under the heading Biden's 2023 budget could have made child care free. Instead, it boosts police. Here's the story. Martin Luther King Jr. wasn't speaking rhetorically when he urged the U.S. to undergo a radical revolution of values. In fact, he spoke quite plainly when he declared that a nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. 55 years later, the U.S. triple evils that King so famously promulgated, racism, poverty, and militarism, manifest in President Joe Biden's most significant value statement, his budget.
What they considered a wish list spending package is a reflection of a president's policy priorities, who gets what, when, and why. My dad has an expression, Biden quipped as he introduced his 2023 budget. He said, "Don't tell me what you value, show me your budget and I will tell you what you value." The Office of Management and Budget Director, Shalanda Young, echoed the same. Budgets are value statements. They are about the kind of country we want to be and the type of future we want to leave our kids. But a close look at Biden's latest proposed budget makes clear the only future American children will inherit is one with a bloated military budget, racist policing, widespread indebtedness, and an uninhabitable planet. Consider violent policing and surveillance. Despite a sensible and growing call by organizers around the U.S. to defund police by redirecting resources from militarized anti-black police departments to programs like free transit, healthcare infrastructure, or wellness resources, Biden is doubling down on his not-so-data-driven tough-on-crime approach, sending the police even more federal money than before. Biden's 2023 budget would allocate at least $30 billion in new police spending, a gut punch to the millions of voices around the country that have decried the enormous spending on police departments, especially since the police perpetrated murder of George Floyd. Under the false guise of security, Biden claimed the answer is not to defund our police departments, but to fund our police and give them all the tools they need. Los Angeles County and New York City, the highest funded law enforcement jurisdictions, show exactly what happens when you give police more money. They spend it doing more of what they have always done. They buy more military equipment, they do more surveillance, they arrest, and they brutalize more people. A mountain of evidence dating back decades shows efforts to community police or increase police accountability and transparency with materials like body cameras are simply not ways to reduce crime. In fact, more police resources have never meant better outcomes. In 2001, research from 200 empirical studies of policing and crime rates found increased policing to be among the weakest links to reducing crime and improving life. The strongest predictors of crime were resource deprivation, poverty, and family disruption. And further, what reduced crime with much greater efficacy than increased policing was increased solidarity, shared goals, and common projects in a neighborhood. Studies have similarly shown a dramatic correlation between crime reduction and increased access to healthcare. Organizers have been abundantly clear on this for decades, arguing that shoveling money into a violent, repressive, racist system is never going to make it less violent, repressive, or racist. And that goes for the military, too. President Biden proposed a defense spending bill of a whopping $813 billion, a 4% increase totaling more than the defense budgets of the next 11 countries combined. Instead of tackling the climate crisis, Biden has prioritized beefing up the military-industrial complex and funding the Pentagon, the world's largest consumer of fossil fuels. Far from being a simple defense force, the U.S. military exists to allow the commission of extreme violence in any corner of the globe at a moment's notice. That neither represents the values to which Americans aspire nor meaningfully benefits anyone in the United States, outside of perhaps a handful of powerful corporations with multinational holdings. If President Biden wanted a budget that reflected a genuine interest in meeting communities' material needs, creating safety and improving the lives of working people, he would prioritize funding programs of social uplift. Crucially, this would include but not be limited to education. President Biden proposed funding universal preschool, but there is no reason to stop there. There's no reason education must start at age 5 and end promptly at 18. If Americans want an informed, engaged people, a country where inquiry and discovery are valued, they must direct resources toward education at all levels, not the military. That means preschool, elementary, high school, and all of higher education. And that means canceling student debt, which never should have existed if they had done things right from the start. Education is only one piece of the puzzle. To build a better America, as Biden claims he wants to do, he should fund paid leave and childcare before preschool. They should fund healthcare and wipe clean the moral stain of medical debt from their collective conscience. They could actually increase unemployment benefits, fund job training programs, increase cash assistance, fund art and community centers, add parks and nature preserves, and on, not investing on the military. A budget is a reflection of values. By increasing money to police and the military, the president's budget reflects the values of violence, brutality, racism, and hopelessness.
Iran is associated with many things. If you are into geology, that would be oil oozing out of the land. Iran is among the world's top five in oil reserves. But oil or petroleum is not the only mineral resource that makes the country rich. Copper is among its other riches, as are lead and zinc. Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In case you didn't know, Iran has over 220 million tons of proven zinc and lead ore reserves. That is significant. But in copper, it has stood among the top 10. What is being done about all that treasure? It can't all stay underground forever. And there are those extracting and producing the minerals. To meet some of them, we made a trek to Zadin Industrial and Mining Group. In 2009, Iran produced 383,000 tons of copper, meaning it had the world's ninth largest reserves of copper at 32.5 million tons. As a matter of fact, the mines at Sarcheshme in Kerman province contain the world's second largest load of copper ore, that is 5% of the world's total in 2009. Iran is one of the most important mineral producers in the world, ranking among 15 major mineral-rich countries. It was estimated to hold some 68 types of minerals, 37 billion tons of proven reserves, and more than 57 billion tons of potential reserves worth $770 billion in 2014. That is not to say mining in Iran has no more work to be done on it. It is still under development, but there are plenty of doers in this country, and plenty more are waiting for further opportunity to arise for their turn at investment. Zadin Group has already arrived at a point to claim we have done what we could. Flotation, or in other words, ore dressing in mineral processing, is a main process of production. It is a method used to separate and concentrate ores by altering their surfaces to a hydrophobic or hydrophilic condition. These chemical and physical changes to the surface of minerals are made using materials with different properties, including activators. Now, in working with minerals, the production process is most efficiently carried out in stages. And what a company just cannot do without is its laboratory for pilot tests before going head in with its whole stock. It is literally to avoid the proverbial haste that makes waste. An asset to corporations is their R&D departments. The reason is they perform research for technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones, hence elevating the company's industrial standing. The corporation's labor paid off. Zadin has registered or patented 26 inventions, 5 of which are already industrialized and are being used in the production line. Indeed, standard is everything, especially for foreign trade. And Iran's production, by far outweighing its domestic use, there is plenty of room for mineral exports from this country. The industry is export-oriented, as a matter of fact. Only 80 to 100,000 tons of produced zinc ingots and 50 to 80,000 tons of lead ingots are consumed domestically. And the remaining were exported to target markets in Asia and Europe, going by 2014 and 2015 estimates. The National Iranian Copper Industries Company is one of the largest companies listed on the Tehran Stock Exchange. It was the largest non-oil exporter in Iran in 2010, with exports worth $1.3 billion. Considered to be the biggest sector in the world in terms of dollar value, the oil and gas sector is a global powerhouse. It uses hundreds of thousands of workers worldwide and generates hundreds of billions of dollars globally each year. The largest volume of products coming out of the oil and gas industry are fuel oil and gasoline. Oil has been used as fuel for transport to generate electricity that lights homes and run factories and machines. And petroleum is the primary material for numerous chemical products, including pharmaceuticals, fertilizers, solvents, and of course plastics. Our lives would be very different without oil. This time, we're going to explore technology and engineering related to the oil and gas industry. We wanted to see who the major players in this field are and why their services are so complex and unique. Our journey took us to a knowledge-based engineering company called Farazan Saze Darya, which began its work over a decade ago. Its main activity is to design and build structures related to oil and gas extraction and transfer. It has a broad scope of engineering services. The things it designs encompass onshore and offshore oil platforms, storage tankers, distribution pipelines, and other structures and buildings related to the oil and gas industry. Just like the structure or facility, oil infrastructure is also susceptible to earthquake damage, particularly in southern Iran, where tremors are more common. This firm was among the first engineering companies to implement the new government standards for earthquake-proofing oil platforms and rigs both in and offland. This company has a long portfolio of projects it has engineered over the years. One such project was to create oil tankers and pumps for the strategic Jask oil project. This is a project that transfers oil through a 1,000-kilometer pipeline along the southern coast to the Jask oil terminal. It is predicted that after completion, this project will have the capacity to transfer up to 1 million barrels of crude per day. However, that's only one of the projects that this company has completed, and there are dozens more.
Previously, such services were imported into the country. This means that when a new oil platform was needed or an old one needed maintenance, industry participants had to employ foreign companies to come to Iran and get the job done. Among other complications, this process was expensive and created a dependency on foreign services.
One of the major advantages of this company is it has localized this specialized engineering service in the country. Indigenizing and employing domestic know-how in the oil industry has helped the country save millions over the years. This company has developed such that now it exports its engineering services. It also collaborates with foreign firms to build and design structures. This firm has created hundreds of employment opportunities, particularly in specialized field of engineering in the gas and oil sector. It has also indirectly generated numerous jobs through subcontractors and construction execution. It is no surprise that this knowledge-based firm has gathered some of the most experienced experts in the industry at its facilities. Among its many activities, it also cooperates with numerous universities and academic institutions. Such steps are necessary for this company to stay up to date. Plus, it incorporates and applies cutting-edge technology in the design and implementation of its projects. This company adheres to strict international standards for designing and building its structures. With years of experience and numerous foreign contracts under its belt, this company has been able to expand its know-how for executing projects with the highest quality.
Here is a fun fact you might not have known. With rich oil reserves, Iran is one of the founding members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, also known as OPEC. Based on figures from OPEC, the country is the fourth largest oil producer among its members. Plus, Iran possesses the third largest oil reserves in the world.
Iran's oil sector will be the first to benefit from the removal of sanctions. Foreign companies remain interested in this market as they anticipate its largest potential. But the road to Iran's market has been obstructed by U.S.-imposed sanctions. Based on figures from OPEC, nearly 80% of the world's proven oil reserves belong to member countries. The majority of these reserves are located in West Asia, amounting to some 64% of the OPEC total. Iran has over 156 billion barrels of proven oil reserves as of 2019, which is roughly 9% of the world's share. Going off of OPEC statistics, Iran produced nearly 3,000 barrels of oil per day on June 2021. Production figures would be much higher if it were not for sanctions imposed on Iran by Washington. Iran's oil industry has faced heavy sanctions since former U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew from the nuclear deal in 2018. According to the Ministry of Oil, the average daily production of oil before the reimposed sanctions was over 3 million barrels per day. The government has plans to surpass the pre-sanctions production levels to over 4 billion barrels per day. That's, of course, under the stipulation that the sanctions against oil companies and exports are removed.
As you might know, Iran's oil industry is a major engine behind the country's economic growth. Oil exports generate millions in foreign revenue, but the country also uses this valuable resource in other industries to make various products. Petroleum and petrochemical products, such as plastics, are also derived from oil and natural gas, and Iran makes a large amount of both.
Figures from the Iranian National Plastic and Polymer Industrial Association show that Iran can potentially export $5 billion worth of petchem products. Currently, over 6 million tons of polymer products are domestically produced every year. Another derivative of crude oil is gasoline, and Iran completely supplies its domestic needs with its daily productions. In the past year, due to reduced internal usage, much of the surplus was exported to international markets. Based on the National Iranian Oil Products Distribution Company, last year, nearly 700,000 barrels of gasoline fuel were produced each day. Data from this company shows that Iran has managed to boost its gasoline exports despite sanctions. Over $1 billion worth of gasoline was exported in the first half of last year alone. That's higher than the year 2020, when Iran exported nearly $500 million worth of this commodity. All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear friend and colleague out there on the field who has prepared an interesting feature for you. Let's go check it out.
Look, I don't want to scare you off, but right now, millions of them are right on your skin, in your mouth, on your teeth, in your gut. They're everywhere. They can control your mind and they can control your mood. You heard me right. I'm talking about bacteria. And as terrifying as that might sound, because, you know, naturally you would think of these microorganisms as harmful little things that cause disease, you shouldn't really panic. You're fine. In fact, there are a lot more good bacteria in our body than bad bacteria.
Bacteria have got a bad reputation, and for good reason. Bacteria can cause pneumonia, meningitis, food poisoning, and a variety of other infections and diseases. These bad bacteria are the reason why we diligently disinfect our hands and wipe down places where germs tend to congregate, and we have not stopped there. To kill these bad microorganisms, we have developed a wide range of antibiotics. But this is not the whole picture. Our bodies are also home to an estimated 100 trillion good bacteria. They are essential to our survival and live in complete harmony with us humans.
It's a symbiotic relationship in which we both benefit, us humans and them good bacteria. It's called mutualism. Think of bees and flowers.
Bees fly from flower to flower to drink the sugary sweet nectar that is made by flowers. While drinking the nectar, bees get some pollen on their hairy bodies, and when they land on the next flower, some of the pollen will rub off their body and pollinate the plant. In this mutualistic relationship, the bees get to eat and the flowering plants get to reproduce. Similarly enough, we help good bacteria eat and thrive, and they in turn help our bodies digest food and absorb nutrients. They are also effective in preventing and treating conditions like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and inflammations associated with autoimmune diseases.
The bacteria that I'm going to be talking about in this week's feature program are primarily present in our digestive system and in some foods and supplements. You've probably heard their name, probiotics. In order to learn how these probiotic supplements and products are made right here in Iran, I'm visiting a pharmaceutical company called Zistakhmir. Here's more.
Actually, I should go back to around 20 years back when we started to think about probiotics in Iran. At that time, probiotic was a really, very low profile subject in Iran. Nobody or a few people, even the physicians, did know about the benefits of probiotics. We started working in the University of Tehran, working as a thesis of students, and after a few years, we established this company, Zistakhmir, in the incubator center of College of Pharmacy, and after 5 years, we could manage to establish this prestigious building and production facility outside in the outskirts of Tehran.
The storage room houses a wide variety of raw materials that are used in the manufacturing process. There are various aisles and many shelves here. There's also a map locating everything. But the effective material, microbes, are not and cannot be kept in any ordinary storage room. Certain probiotic strains are stored at extremely low temperatures and in special freezers to avoid any kind of contamination. These microbial strains are then grown. This is called fermentation. At the end of this process, a broth is made which contains a large number of probiotic organisms. Because this broth is in dilute form, it should be concentrated. That's when centrifugation comes into play and turns the broth into a cream-like substance. The paste is then spray-dried.
After the spray-drying phase, probiotic is transformed into a dry powder and is sent to a clean room. Clean rooms are controlled environments that are packed with industry-standard equipment to ensure that the herb war pollutants are kept at extremely low levels. Clean rooms must have, you know, consistent humidity, temperature, and pressure conditions. Special ventilating systems and air conditioning systems are used to guarantee this. Also, architectural designs in a clean room must be smooth and easy to clean and also have minimal ledges and joints.
The production of probiotics is a complex procedure and requires extensive skill and experience. Quality control is essential throughout the whole production process, from raw materials to the final product. Zistachmir is equipped with different laboratories and control rooms to ensure each stage in the production process is systematically controlled, high standards are met, and objectives are pursued.
At the moment, hopefully, Iran is very advanced in terms of probiotic products. I think that at the moment we have around 10 companies which are producing probiotics. And of course, because we have been the first company, we have a main market share in, comparing to other competitors in this field. So the probiotic industry in Iran is deeply rooted, and we don't need any to import any products or intermediate anything from the outside.
The development of formulations requires extensive research on the best combination of strains. This is an ongoing process that keeps evolving by the day. Various research teams are at work to find new and more effective combinations. Depending on the indication, different probiotic strains are chosen and tested on their compatibility. In addition to the API, active pharmaceutical ingredients, research teams consider including other ingredients in the formulation, namely prebiotics, which are a type of fiber that human body cannot digest but serves as food for probiotics. Back to the clean room.
Well, based on the formula, different probiotic powders are blended together to form an evenly distributed and balanced mixture. Besides probiotics, other ingredients, essential ones, are also mixed, including flavoring material or binders or prebiotics. This blend then gets ready to be presented into its final dosage form, like tablets, capsules, and sachets.
This is the room where powders are pressed into tablets. The capsule filling machine, and the sachet packing machine. Probiotics have a wide range of applications. Here at Zistachmir, the probiotic products come in a variety of forms benefiting different age groups and genders. Oral drops and sachets for infants and children, capsules and tablets for adults and the elderly, and vaginal capsules for women. Thus, by producing them inside Iran, the country can save a lot of money. And with that, I want to conclude my report of yet another company located in Pardis Technology Park.
It's time now to leave a little room for a media review. Tehran Times of April 2022 quotes Iran's Minister of Industry, Mining and Trade telling of plans for growth in the country's mining and trade.
Reza Fatemi Amin said, according to the plan, we are looking to achieve 12.5% growth in the industry sector and 10% growth in the mining and trade sectors in the current Iranian calendar year 1401. In late March, the minister had announced that the regional planning for the industry and trade sectors of the country is prepared by his ministry in accordance with the capacities of each province and to prevent the concentration of industrial units in one region.
Acknowledging the importance of outing raw materials into products, the Mining and Trade Minister had said a month earlier that Industry, Mining, Trade Ministry supports knowledge-based products.
The minister's statement was in line with the slogan of the present Iranian calendar year 1401, which is named by the leader of Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, as production,
knowledge-based, and job-creating. The ministry's plans for the realization of the present year's slogan will be in three levels. Fatemiye Amin said, "In the first level, we rank, prioritize, target, and determine indicators, and we monitor. For example, in the export field, we will base the ranking of exporters on knowledge-based factors. That is, exporters who export knowledge-based products will receive higher rankings and points and will be more supported." He also added, "Industries that move toward production of knowledge-based products or industries that create more jobs are also supported by the ministry. The second level is dedicated to projects that need to be defined in this area."
And that wraps up our program for today. Let's hear what you have to say about this industry. Stay tuned next week for another edition of Bazaar.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Findings show that before the advent of Omicron, vaccination benefited even those who had had a bout of COVID-19. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Saima May Sadiq, writer. This article is published under the heading COVID vaccine plus infection can lead to month of immunity. Here's more. Even people who have had COVID-19 receive long-lasting benefits from a full course of vaccination, according to three recent studies. What's more, one of the studies found that the hybrid immunity caused by vaccination and infection is long-lasting, conferring highly effective protection against symptomatic disease for at least 6 to 8 months after vaccination. The data were collected before the Omicron variant emerged, casting some doubt on the study's relevance today. But if the findings hold up, they could inform vaccination schemes and vaccine passports, which some countries require for entry to places such as restaurants. The work also counters high-profile claims that people who have had COVID-19 don't benefit from vaccination. Just such a claim helped to launch some of the research. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro said that he already had COVID-19, and for this reason, it is not necessary to take a vaccination, says Julio Croda, an infectious disease doctor and epidemiologist at the Oswaldo Cruz Foundation in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Kuroda and his colleagues drew on Brazilian vaccination and infection databases to test such assertions. The researchers found that between February 2020 and November 2021, people who had previously been infected with SARS-CoV-2 and then received one vaccine dose avoided as many as 45% of the COVID-19 cases that the group would have been exposed